This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
All this week, I am talking with Dr. Catherine Ramsland. Dr. Catherine Ramsland, as you may know if you're a follower of true crime, wrote the book on Dennis Rader, the BTK killer, his autobiography, in fact. She spent many years communicating back and forth with Dennis, gaining an insight unlike anyone else into the mind of one of the most notorious serial killers alive today. This week, we're going in to her mind to learn about the experiences that she had while working with Dennis Rader at that time and all the way up to today, trying to better understand the mind of a killer. Join me all this week for parts 1 through 5 of my conversation with Dr. Catherine Ramsland right here on the podcast. When you talk to him about the various crimes that he committed, the various cases, how did he handle himself? Was it anyway how we saw, very matter of fact? I know you said it felt different in that hearing. Was he trying to justify his actions? Walk me there. How were those conversations about the specific lives that he took and his ways of going about doing so?
Well, I mean, he took 10 lives that we know of. He had a far longer list of people he targeted. He sent me a list of 55 projects, as he called them.
Yeah.
These were people who didn't come home when he expected them to. There he is sitting in their house waiting to kill them. They didn't get there. Or, you know, something else interrupted the plan. So he certainly knew what he was doing. He didn't justify it. He just, as a teenager, he identified himself with serial killers. He read about Harvey Glattman from the 1950s. He read about H.H. Holmes. He wanted to be famous like them. He wanted to be on the cover of these true detective magazines. He wanted to make women captive and helpless like they did. So he was excited about that from a fairly young age, before the word serial killer was even being used. He was already identifying himself in that manner. And that became part of his fantasy life for years. It carried him through his military service, brought him back home. He got married before he acted out at all. So he didn't justify anything. He just knew that he had to have a double life. He was going to go ahead and be a citizen, father, a husband, and involved in his church, but he was also going to let himself be the serial killer that he wanted to be. So to him, that was just who he was. It wasn't really a matter of justifying it in any way.
How did he go about, I mean, to start something like that after you've married, after you've gone through military service, you got some life, you know, behind you a little bit. And then to suddenly start acting that out, just, it seems bizarre. How did he explain that?
Well, first he tried to abduct a young woman, and that didn't work out so well. She got away. So that was kind of the first acting. But he had a very active, rich, multidimensional fantasy life. He envisioned himself doing these things. He had a hit kit. He had a ruse. He had, you know, ideas about what he was going to do. So mental rehearsal, years of it, prepared him to do it. Then he lost a job that mattered very much to him. And his wife suddenly became the breadwinner, which, you know, in 1974 in the Midwest, it's not a good place for a man to be.
Sure.
And he was frustrated and angry. And he broke into someone's house and he felt powerful doing it. The person wasn't home, but he felt powerful doing it. And it wasn't long after that he saw Julie and Josephine Otero. He had a mother-daughter fantasy. He thought it would be pretty easy to get into their house, abduct them, and take them to an abandoned barn. This is the fantasy.
Yeah.
And take them to an abandoned barn and do what he wanted to them. But what he didn't count on was that the Joseph Otero, the father, was home that day. They also had a guard dog, and Joey Otero was home that day. So he walked into a house with four people, And this is his first experience of having to do something that is going to end up with everybody dead in the house. He's quite daunted by it, but he put it in motion. He had to go through with it. They'd seen him. He just decided to go through with it. None of the plan worked. First of all, their car was out of gas, so he wasn't going to be able to take that anywhere. And so he just ended up binding all of them in different rooms and strangling them. And even that, as he talks about it, was very difficult because strangling somebody took a long time and his hands got tired and he didn't think he was going to be able to manage it. And actually the girl, 11-year-old girl, Josephine, revived. And so he took her into the basement and hanged her from a pipe. So it was a horrible experience, but none of it was well planned, despite the fact that he thought he was planning it well.
Yeah.
A lot of mistakes made. He left some things behind he had to go back and get. It was the middle of the day. He could have so easily been caught. So he's very surprised that he wasn't.
That's what I was going to ask. Was he surprised that he wasn't caught immediately after that? Was there a time of fear of just waiting for those officers to show up at the doorstep after that?
Yes, he believed somebody had seen him. He was sure he'd left something that incriminated him. He'd parked his car not very far away, and he really expected that. He kept a few items, but he hid them. He had these, what he called, hidey holes around the house, and he had Joseph Otero's watch, and he had, I think, a radio, a couple other things that he'd taken from the house. And so he hid them. But he was scared. He really thought he was going to get caught.
There's more to come in my conversation with Dr. Catherine Ramsland about the BTK killer, Dennis Rader. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our 5-part series here on the podcast. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.